Please join me in prayer. Amen. So those of you who were here on Good Friday know that I'm worrying and thinking a lot now about the challenge of how do we live lives of hope in this cynical and worldly wise age. And I've been thinking about it a lot, especially since last Saturday, since I saw, as many of you saw or participated in on the television, I saw the March for Our Lives. And all of these incredible young people, these incredible kids, and the movement that they're inspiring, that they're driving, the incredible speeches they gave, David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez, Cameron Caskey, and the one that struck me closest to the heart, Naomi Wadler, this 11-year-old girl who stood up and said, "I am speaking on behalf of all the forgotten and unnamed Black girls and women who've suffered violence, who've been murdered." She said, "People have said that I'm too young to have these thoughts on my own. People have said that I'm a tool of some nameless adult. It's not true," she said. We know life isn't equal for everyone, and we know what is right and wrong." That so inspired me. It left me so full of feelings of hope and joy. But I have to tell you, I felt other feelings too, a kind of embarrassment and even a bit of shame that I felt. Let me make to you my confession. I initially reacted to these kids when the murders first happened in their school in the same way that many of their opponents reacted. These kids are too smooth. They're too polished, I thought. Every comment they made from the very beginning was so on point. And they never allowed themselves to be distracted from what they were saying or swayed off track by the tricky commentators or interviewers. Surely, I thought, they were being coached. They must be. Not that I minded, of course. I never doubted that the things they were saying reflected their real sentiments. But surely someone must have helped them create this messaging, these talking points, this sharp and penetrating rhetoric they had. I was suffering, I came to believe, a failure of imagination, which is embarrassing for me because I pride myself on being someone of imagination. How could they be so well trained? I couldn't imagine it. How could their schools have done such a good job building up these kids to be such powerful citizen leaders with sharp minds and a sharp vision of the common good? I was so embarrassed by my failure of imagination, by my failure to imagine how it would change you to be witness to such a horrifying shooting as what they were part of in Parkland, such a place of death. In my desire, I always have to avoid sentimentalizing the news, I missed something. I don't think that's a bad thing, to be nervous about the way the news gets sentimentalized and anecdoted. I am very mistrustful of anecdotal news. Every racist has a great story about a white person who was negatively impacted by affirmative action. And if all we ever hear are those anecdotes, then we'll never see the big picture. You want to talk about kids dying? Well, my first response is, well, let's talk about the numbers. Tell me what the statistics say. 17 kids died that day at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. What a horror that was. Last year in Chicago, 38 kids died by handguns, by firearms. The year before, 36. The year before, 27. So there's a bigger picture than just one horrifying story. But that's exactly where my imagination failed me, because in my fear of being swept away by the sentimentality of the story, I missed the weight and the import of this movement that was coming about. My convictions about not distorting the news distorted the news. and rendered me incapable of understanding what those kids had faced and the steel it gave them as it forged them into being leading citizens of our age. Because I couldn't imagine, I was afraid to imagine my way into the crucifixion-like horror of that day, I've been unable to imagine until very recently the resurrection-like power of the movement that's going on around us. What it says is that when the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome brought spices to the tomb so that they might anoint and minister to his dead body. They were worried that they weren't going to be able to move the giant stone that was blocking entrance to the tomb. But when they got there, they saw that it had already been moved, that something had already happened that they hadn't been there to witness. And they entered the tomb, and they saw there a young man dressed in a white robe, seated on the right side. And they were worried. He said to them, "Don't be worried. You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, that's the place where they laid him. So go. Tell the disciples, tell Peter that he, Jesus, is going on ahead of you up to Galilee, and you will see him there just as he told you you would. Just follow him." And the women, so they went out and they fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement, it says, had seized them. And then it says, they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. This is Mark's version of the resurrection. It's very different. We do ourselves a disservice always if we miss the differences among the gospel versions, the gospel stories. In Mark's version, that's the ending. That's the ending of the gospel. So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. The Gospel of Mark never shows us the picture of the disciples hearing the news, or of the women coming to believe more deeply, or of Jesus finally appearing to them. That's not in the Gospel of Mark. Maybe the women, their imaginations failed them too. Maybe those disciples who'd run away on Thursday night, maybe their imaginations had failed them too. But we're left to wonder at the end of the Gospel of Mark, who spread the good news? How did the word get out? And that brings us back to that mysterious young man, that young person, that kid in the white robe. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man, it said, dressed in a white robe, sitting on the side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, "Do not be alarmed, for you're looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who is crucified. He has been raised. He is not here." This mysterious young man, it's not Jesus, it's not an angel, it's not the gardener. Other versions have other people who meet the women at the tomb, but here it's just this young person in a white robe, and the implication is that this is a new believer, a baptismal candidate, someone preparing for baptism, just like we just saw, in a white robe, a new member, just now being initiated. The younger generation of new disciples already taking its place in the community of those who follow Jesus. And he's the one who tells the good news. He's the one who's free from fear. He's the one with enough imagination to understand what is really happening. The male disciples are too afraid to come. They miss it. The female disciples come according to the customs of women caring for the dead, according to the customs of their culture, and to their credit, they come. But it may be that those very customs of their culture also force them to miss it too. It's this young person, this new disciple still in training, still in the white robes of initiation. He's the one who truly sees. He's the one who truly knows. He's the one who speaks with authority. He's the one who spreads the good news. And it's that young person, who asks the obvious question, why are you here looking for him here in the place of the dead? He is not here. He is risen. He is gone on before. If you want to follow him, go to the place of life. That, I fear, is the thing that I keep missing, that I kept going to the places of death, to the graves of political analysis or worldly wise intellectualizing or strategies for social change, that I'm still stuck in the statistics of death and the politics of death and the mechanics of death that so overwhelm hope in our culture today. When those kids from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, like that young man in the white robe, are telling me something different this year. Why do you keep going to the grave, they say? Don't you get it? He's not there. Stop going to the places of death. In some ways, the Easter miracle isn't about where he is, but it's where he's not. He's not there. He's not in the grave. He's in the place of life. He's not in the offices of obstructionist congresspeople. He's in the activism of people getting involved, of people moving in the world and going toward the place of life. He's not in the place of death. He's not in our cynical calculations. He's not in my fearful refusal to let tragedy touch me. He's not in the endless patience of the National Rifle Association and their infuriating confidence that this will all just blow over. He's not in the naked pandering of politicians or in the studied ignorance and the willful deafness of so many of our leaders. He's not in the places of death. He is going on ahead. And for those of us who seek to follow, the message of the resurrection is that we too need to go on ahead, because that's where he's leading us and calling us forward. At the place of resurrection, you can't just plant a flag and declare victory, because that's just not where he is. No, we go, we see the good news, we hear it preached, and then we go forward. The resurrection lies in following ahead. That's what the life of hope is. And for me this year, I see it in the March for Lives and in all those kids and all they symbolize, not just about the issue of gun violence, but about the issue of a sense of possibility, of a future that God owns, and for which God has a plan, a yearning, a desire that we are called to help fulfill, pointing the way ahead. Now, I don't want to anoint these kids or anyone else saviors, because when we anoint people as saviors, it's exactly when we disempower them. That's what they want, right, is their faces on T-shirts instead of giving us the message we need to follow. And so that at the first sign of any personal flaws, we're free to abandon them. That would be like planting the flag and declaring victory, raising up these kids and putting them on the cover of Time magazine as saviors. No, it's the message that matters. Go on ahead. But in our landscape so devoid of truth, so overwhelmed by cynicism and the worldly wisdom of this present age, these kids are the closest thing I've seen to the voice of truth, to the white-robed righteousness of a follower of Jesus in quite some time. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be realistic. I'm not saying we shouldn't make hard calculations. We are called to be clever as serpents, as well as innocent as doves. But the dove part has to come first. Our cleverness must serve our innocence. Our realism must serve our hope. So the message of the resurrection is stop looking in the places of death. He's not there. Go on ahead. That's where he's leading. Follow. Live the resurrection. Go on ahead in hope, which is to say in the confidence that God owns the future. Amen.